palazzo. You can't afford a painting. You can't afford a large drawing or an important drawing, but you can most likely afford something small.
Snapper speaks. Picasso's work is surprisingly affordable. Leonard speaks.
Snap has a couple of his own.
Snapper speaks. I have a nice crayon drawing of a woman's head and a pencil drawing of a dove.
Leonard speaks. And he got them cheap because dealers need to sell.
We stop in front of a building. Leonard speaks.
I did some research before we arrived. There's a place in here. High-end, but not super high-end. They have nice pieces in stock, and they're in a deep, deep financial hole.
He opens the door, and we step into the building. The gallery is on the second floor. We walk up a flight of stairs. Snapper opens a polished steel door. We step into a large, open room with white walls, a gray wood floor, and a lofted ceiling. Art hangs on the walls. Some pieces are large, abstract, colorful. Some are small, simple drawings. Some are minimal, monotone panels. In the back corner of the room, there is a reception desk, behind it a door that leads into an office. Leonard looks at me, speaks.
Let's go back there.
We walk toward the office. As we approach it, an attractive woman in her late 30s steps out. She has short black hair, wears deep red lipstick, a black suit. She smiles. May I help you? Leonard speaks.
We're looking for Picasso drawings.
I have a few.
We like to see them.
Come with me. We walk through the door into a small room. There is a large cabinet against one wall. The drawers are labeled with artists' names. A couple of small frame drawings sit on top of it. There are two chairs against another wall, a door against a third. The woman speaks. Have a seat. I'll be right back. Snapper offers us the chairs. We sit. The woman walks through the door, quietly closes it behind her. I look at Leonard, speak. This is fucking weird. He laughs.
Why do you think it's weird?
The idea that I might be going home with a Picasso is just weird.
Get over it.
I laugh. What do I do with it when I get home?
You put it on your fucking wall. What do you think you do?
What if someone steals it? Leonard looks at Snapper.
Snapper?
Snapper looks at me. You find him, and you fucking shoot him. I laugh. The woman opens the door. She steps into the room with one small drawing, probably 8x10, and a slightly larger one, probably 10x12. She moves the drawings currently on the cabinet and replaces them with the new ones. We stand and look at them. Leonard speaks.
If what you see doesn't move you, make you smile, make you happy, make you feel something, then fuck it. Don't buy it.
I laugh. The woman laughs. I look back at the drawings. The woman speaks. You feel anything? I shake my head. No. I have more. She picks up the drawings, leaves, comes back a few moments later with two more. I look at them, feel nothing. She leaves, brings back two more, nothing, two more. I like one of them. It's two pieces of paper set on top of each other. A smiling male face is simply drawn in blue crayon across both of them. The word papier is scrawled in gray pencil across the top of the lower piece of paper. The word col is scrawled along the bottom of the top piece of paper. A large star, also in gray pencil, is haphazardly drawn over both pieces and the blue face. Picasso signed his name in large letters along the bottom. The work is about 14 inches wide and 28 inches tall, and it is housed in an old, ornate, black carved wood frame. I look at it, and it makes me smile. I imagine Picasso sitting in a messy studio somewhere in France. I imagine him making it while he was bored. I imagine him sticking it in a drawer and forgetting about it. Maybe he gave it away. Maybe he sold it when he needed some money. Maybe someone found it after he died. I don't know how it ended up here, in this gallery in Chicago, but I look at it and it makes me smile and I know it's going home with me. I ask the woman how much. She tells me. Leonard says no way. that's above market, and he gives her a number. She responds, they go back and forth, until they arrive at an agreeable price. They look at me, I smile, and say, okay. I give the woman my credit card, she says she prefers checks. I say, I prefer credit cards. She says, okay, she rings it up. I sign the slip. She asks me if I'd like it delivered. I say, no, I'll take it with me. I pick it up, take it off the cabinet. Leonard and Snapper and I thank the woman and we walk out of the gallery. I carry the Picasso under my arm. I smile as I walk. I have a Picasso under my arm. I think it's completely ridiculous. Leonard looks at me, smiles, speaks.
You look good with that thing.
I laugh. He looks at Snapper, speaks.
He looks good with it, doesn't he?
Snapper speaks.
It really fits him. Maybe he should come back tomorrow and buy another one.
Why not? You only live once.
That is certainly the truth. You only live once. Buy Picassos whenever possible.
We laugh. Walk down the street, back to the Mercedes, get inside, pull away. We drive back to my apartment. Leonard says they have to get to the airport. They have a flight in a few hours. I say, thank you for stopping. It has been a great day. Leonard says, no problem. We'll be back soon. I get out of the car. They pull away. I walk into my apartment. I don't have a hammer or a nail, so I lean my Picasso against the wall near my bed. I laugh every time I see it. Spring becomes summer. I talk to Lily. Sometimes I read to her, sometimes I just sit with her. I go to St. Louis, Milwaukee, North Side, South Side, North Side, South Side. I go out every night. I go to bars with my friends. I smoke, play pool, watch my friends get drunk. I stay out late. I still can't sleep. When the bars close, I walk through dark, silent, empty streets. I walk until it starts to become light. I sit by the lake and I watch the sunrise. I sleep during the day, a few hours a day. I read, look at art. I go to Detroit, Rockford, Gary, Indiana. I decide I want to write something. I have no idea what. I don't really care. I just want to try. I buy a computer. I sit down in front of it and stare at the screen. I open a word processing document and with two fingers I type, "What are you staring at, dumbass?" over and over and over again. A woman stops me on the street and she says, "You won't always feel this way." I ask her what she means and she says, "I can smell your pain. I can smell it." I'm not sure if she's a genius or a lunatic. I turn and quickly walk away. I see someone I used to know, someone I haven't seen for a few years. He sees me, smiles, walks over, and says, "How's your fucking drinking problem, Fry?" I say, "It's good. How's your drinking problem?" He says he's broke and unemployed and it sucks, but it allows him to go out every night. I give him $10, say, "Have one on me, old friend. Have one on me." I go to Milwaukee again, Rockford twice, Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'm still too thin. I go on a special diet. I eat all of my meals at either the Wiener Circle, Taco Burrito Palace No. 2, or the Olympic Giro House. I only order items with red meat. I always order extra red meat. With most things, I also order extra cheese. A man offers to sell me a 6-pack of Whoop-Ass and a bottle of I Know You Can. I ask him how much. He says, "You ain't got enough, motherfucker, but I bet you can afford some of that lonely shit." I visit Lily. Sometimes I read to her. Sometimes I speak to her. Sometimes I just sit with her. Summer becomes fall. I had my last drink 1 year ago. Exactly 1 year ago. I took my last hit from a pipe 1 year and 2 days ago. I am on the train, going to the northern suburbs. I have been to the house before. It is the house where I did my first pickup, where the strange man in silk pajamas played a joke on me. I've been here 3 or 4 other times, each time someone different came to the door. I am supposed to get a briefcase and take it to the south side of the city. It is late morning. The train is almost empty. I sit alone, reading, occasionally glancing out the window. The sky is gray. The leaves have turned. They're starting to fall. It is starting to get cold. I get off the train, take a cab. I remember how to get there. I see the house, large gray stone. I walk to the front door, knock. No one comes. I knock again, hear shuffling feet, heavy breathing. I wait. The feet stop shuffling. I still hear breathing. I knock again. The door opens. It's the pajama man again. He's wearing a pair of dirty white underwear briefs and a dirty white t-shirt. There are deep, dark circles beneath his eyes. His nose is running and he's shaking. He looks like he hasn't slept in a long time. He's holding a 9mm pistol in one of his hands, and he is pointing it at my face.
What do you want?
I am shocked, terrified, can't speak.
Who sent you here?
I don't want to die. I immediately start shaking.
Who sent you here?
The black hole of the barrel is an inch from my face. I can smell the metal. I don't want to die. I can't breathe, move, speak. I don't want to die. I'm frozen.
Motherfucker!
The man cocks the gun.
Who the fuck sent you here?
I don't want to die. I piss myself. Urine runs down my leg, into my shoes. It keeps coming. My bladder is done.
Who?
He shakes the pistol. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
Sent you?
I don't want to die. He shakes the pistol. Fuck me.
Motherfucker!
I've got to get away. Move, move, move. If I don't get away, I'm going to die. I take a small step back. The man stares at me. The pistol is still aimed at my face. I take another small step. I am so scared. I don't want to die. Please, please, please. I take another step. The man stares at me. His finger is on the trigger. Please.
Leonard, send you?
Please, another step. Please, don't shoot me. Please.
Leonard, send you?
Another step. Don't shoot me. Please.
Leonard, send you?
I don't want to die. I don't want to die.
You tell Leonard.
Another step.
That I'll shove this gun up his ass.
Another step.
And blow his motherfucking head off.
Another step back. Another step. Another step. The man watches me. Please don't shoot me. Please. Another step. Another step. Please, please, please let me get away. The man watches me. I'm almost gone. He lowers his gun. Wipes his nose, shuts the door. I keep moving back until I reach the sidewalk. I turn and quickly walk away. My heart is exploding. My legs are jelly. I'm shaking. There is urine all over my legs and feet, my pants and my socks and my shoes. When I reach the end of the block, I turn the corner. I'm away. Holy fuck, I'm away. I fall to my knees on a small patch of brown grass between the sidewalk and the street. I start vomiting. I take the train home. My pants are covered in piss. I buy a newspaper to keep over my lap so that the other passengers don't see my pants. It's not a comfortable ride. I call Leonard, tell him what happened. He is not happy. He tells me he's coming to Chicago to handle this personally, and he wants me to meet him at his usual hotel in the morning. I spend the rest of the day chain-smoking cigarettes. I can still see the black hole of the barrel. I can still smell the metal. I can still hear the bullet entering the chamber. I can still feel the urine running down my leg. Night comes, I can't sleep. I can still see his eyes, hear his voice. He had his finger on the trigger and he could have killed me. I go to the bank, fill a bag with cash. I walk to the hotel, it's a long walk. I want to burn away the fear. I still feel it. It doesn't work. I still feel it. I take the elevator up, go to the restaurant. Leonard and Snapper are sitting at a table, waiting for me. They do not look happy. They stand as I approach them. Leonard speaks.
My son.
What's up, Leonard?
How are you doing?
I'm good. I look at Snapper. What's up, Snapper?
You tell me.
I had a weird day yesterday.
So I fucking hear.
Leonard sits. We follow. Leonard speaks.
Have you eaten?
No.
Let's order, and then I want you to tell Snapper what happened.
We order, and unlike most of our meals together, the order is not excessive. After we order, I recount yesterday's events. Midway through, our food comes, and I continue to speak as we eat. Neither Leonard or Snapper interrupt. They just sit and quietly listen to me. When I finish, Snapper takes a deep breath, pushes his plate away, looks at Leonard, and speaks.
You know what this means?
I do.
He's finally gone completely crazy.
I thought he was getting better.
Am I authorized?
Yes.
Snapper turns to me.
You're coming with me, kid.
I speak.
No way.
You owe him.
I don't care.
He stuck a fucking gun in your face.
I don't care. I'm not going.
I lean over and pick up the bag of cash, which has been sitting at my feet. I set it in front of Leonard. I also don't want to do this anymore. I brought you the money I owe you. Leonard looks surprised.
You're gonna quit because some crazy fuck pulled a gun on you?
That's part of the reason.
What's the other part?
I feel good about staying clean. I feel like I can do it long term. Knowing that, I've got to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. No offense, but I don't want to be a delivery man anymore, no matter how much I get paid. I don't want guns in my face. I want to try to have a normal life, or at least something that resembles one.
Holy shit. This is crazy. You should hear yourself.
I laugh.
What if I promoted you?
You know, I can't really be a part of what you do. And I don't want to be any more a part of it than I already am. I gotta do something on my own.
What?
I don't know. But I have enough money to take some time and figure it out. Leonard motions to the bag of cash.
I don't want the money.
I owe it to you.
I want to know what you spent it on.
Just take it.
Why won't you tell me where you spent it?
I just don't want to.
Tell me what you spent it on, and you can keep it. And you can leave your job, and you can let Snapper deal with your friend in the suburbs. I agree with your intentions, and I think it will be good for you to start dealing with the future. I just want to know where the money went.
I'd rather show you than tell you.
Fine. Show me.
You have a car downstairs?
Of course.
Let's go. Leonard motions for the bill, gets it, signs it. We stand, I pick up my bag. We leave. Snapper gets the car. He picks us up in front of the hotel. We start driving north and west. It isn't far. I give Snapper directions. We stop at the florist, where I always stop. As soon as I walk through the door, they know what I'm going to buy. I buy red roses, beautiful red roses. Lily loved them when she was alive. I hope she still loves them. We pull through the gates. We're still in the city, but on its edges. We can see the towering skyline in the distance. Land spreads out before us, around us. There are thousands and thousands of stones. We drive slowly along a thin, winding road. It is quiet, still, empty. We turn off the main road onto a smaller road, drive for a moment. I motion for Snapper to pull over. I step out of the car. Leonard and Snapper step out of the car. I lead them through the aisles. We do not speak. The only sounds are our steps and the chatter of small birds. 30 yards in from the road, I stop in front of two simple white stones. The stones are identical to each other. Words in simple print read, Catherine Ann Sanders, 1932 to 1994. You were loved. Lillian Grace Sanders, 1970 to 1994. You were loved. There are dead roses in front of Lily's stone. I pick them up and put the fresh roses in their place. I lean toward the point where the stone meets the grass. where I imagine she lies, her head resting on a pillow. I whisper, "Hello, I love you. I brought some friends with me. You probably remember Leonard. He always asks about you. I hope you're well. I love you. I love you." I step back, stand with Leonard and Snapper, who are staring at the stones, and I speak. They didn't have any family except each other, so I took care of them. I had them move from the county morgue to a funeral home. I bought them dresses for burial, had them placed in silk-lined coffins, and I got these plots and the stones. They were Catholic, which I didn't know until after, so I had a priest perform the services. Lily had a shitty life. A shitty fucking life. And I thought I could change that, but I couldn't. So I wanted this, at least, to be nice for her. I look at Leonard. Tears are streaming down his face. He speaks.
"They're beautiful."
"Yeah.
I've never seen anything so beautiful."
I nod, start to tear up.
"I'm gonna have roses sent here once a week forever."
"You don't have to do that, Leonard."
"And these graves will always be tended."
"You don't have to do that, Leonard."
"I know I don't have to. But I'm gonna."
"Thank you, Leonard." He looks at Snapper, speaks.
"Let's pay our respects. Let them know we're thinking about them."
Snapper speaks. "I got a feeling they know."
"I'm sure they do."
They step forward and they cross themselves, get down on one knee, start to pray. I don't believe in God, but I like to think that Lily is in a better place. So I get down on one knee and I close my eyes and I pray. I hope she knows that for her and only her, for her and only her, I pray. Fall becomes winter. I sit in front of my computer for hours. I write, "What are you scared of, dumbass? Why are you scared?" A man at a bar tells me I look like a fly. I ask him why he thinks I look like a fly, and he tells me that flies are born in shit and live in shit, and he tells me that I look like shit and look like I've lived in, with, and through shit. Thus, I look like a fly. I don't know what to say, so I say, "Thank you, my friend. Thank you." I meet a girl named Julianne. She's Danny's friend. She wants a roommate. We get along. She's from the South, and her accent makes me laugh. I decide that I will be her roommate. We start looking for an apartment. We find a big apartment with two bedrooms, high ceilings, a living room, dining room, and kitchen. It should be expensive, but isn't. We're trying to figure out why. There is a loud rumble, and the building shakes, and the windows shake, and the floor shakes. Everything fucking shakes. Julianne wonders if we're having an earthquake. I laugh, walk to the back of the apartment, look out the window. The L tracks are 10 feet away. I like the L tracks, like the shaking and the rumbling, like the apartment. I tell Julianne I think we should move in. She agrees with me. We sign a lease. We move in, and every 15 minutes we rumble and shake. Rumble and shake. I meet another man at another bar. He looks me in the eyes. He says, "I am mentally ill and unstable." I tell him I am mentally ill and unstable as well. He tells me that his doctors have advised him to never drink again, that it could kill him. I tell him my doctors have given me the same advice. He tells me that he goes to bars because he doesn't know what else to do with his life. I tell him I know the feeling and buy him a cola, an ice-cold glass of cola. I sit in front of my computer. Every 15 minutes I rumble and shake. Winter in Chicago is cold as hell. Leonard's visits stop. He hates the cold. He avoids it. I talk to him once a week or so. He calls me from strange places. Venezuela and Costa Rica and Barbados, Guadeloupe and the Dominican Republic. I ask him what he's doing, why he's traveling so much. He says, I'm TCB, my son. TC motherfucking B. I ask him what that means. He says it means taking care of business. Taking care of motherfucking business. Leonard calls, tells me he's sending me a plane ticket. He wants me to come to his beach house for the Super Bowl. I get the ticket, get on the plane, fly to LA, get off the plane. My friend Chris is picking me up. I went to college with him, lived with him for a year. He works at a golf course in Orange County. He wants to own his own golf course at some point. Right now, he works as an assistant greenskeeper. I ask him what that means. He says it means I mow fucking lawns all day. I walk out of the terminal. It's bright, warm, sunny. Chris is waiting for me at the curb. I climb into his SUV. He says, what's up? I say, not much. He asks, where are we going? I say, Orange County, and I give him an address. The drive takes just over an hour. We talk about friends, laugh. He asks me how I'm doing. I say, well. I ask him how he's doing. He says, fine. All he does is work. I see a big sign for the Pageant of the Masters. It makes me laugh. We drive past an outdoor theater called the Irvine Bowl, which says it is the home of the Pageant of the Masters. I laugh again. We get to Laguna Beach. We get lost. I call Leonard. He gives us directions. We find his house at the end of a dead-end street. It's a large, white, contemporary house, all angles and glass, built into the side of a cliff overlooking the ocean. There are 10 or so cars parked in the driveway and along the curb. All of them are expensive European cars. Porsches, Bentleys, Mercedeses, Jaguars, BMWs. We park, walk to the door. There's a man at the door. He asks for our names. I give him my name and he lets us in. We walk through the door into a large open living room. Everything is white. The floors, the walls, the furniture. There are white flowers and white vases. White lamps with white shades. Long white linen curtains on the edges of the windows. There's a stairway leading down at the back edge of the room. We hear noise from below. We walk to the stairway and descend. We walk into another large open room. The front wall of the room is made of glass. Beyond the glass, there is a deck, and beyond the deck, open views of the Pacific Ocean. Along another wall, there is a pool table with black felt. Along a third, there is a bar, a long white bar. A bartender in a white tuxedo stands behind it serving drinks. Along the back wall, there is a huge television, the largest television I've ever seen, its image coming from a projector hanging on the ceiling. There are three large, soft couches in a U in front of the television. There are about 30 people spread through the room and on the deck, and there are many more women than men. The men are diverse, black, white, and Asian, some in suits, some in shorts and t-shirts. The women are all white, all beautiful, most are blonde. Most have surgically enhanced chests and are well-dressed, though some wear less than others. When we reach the bottom of the stairs, Chris looks around and looks at me and smiles and says, "Holy fuck, this is going to be fun." I see Leonard on the deck. He's smoking a cigar and talking to a man in his 60s with long white hair and a long white beard. The man has a young blonde girl with him. I walk toward Leonard. He sees me, raises his hand, yells, "My son! My son has arrived!" The man and the blonde turn and look at me. I laugh. "Hi, Leonard."
"You just get here?"
"Yeah."
"That's your friend?"
"Yeah, Chris, Leonard. Leonard, Chris." They shake hands. The man interrupts, tells Leonard they'll talk later. He walks away with the woman, who glances back at us. Leonard looks at Chris, speaks.
"You live nearby, right?"
"Yeah."
"You smoke weed?"
"Yeah."
"You like fucking hot chicks?"
Chris laughs.
"Of course." "The guy who just walked away is the biggest pot dealer on the West Coast, and the woman is his wife who's a porn star. She likes to fuck, and he doesn't care who she fucks, and I could tell by the look she gave you that she wants to fuck you. So if you want either weed or her, let me know."
Chris laughs again. "Seriously?" Leonard nods.
Yeah. But you better be ready.
Ready for what?
She stars in S&M porn films, and she might want to beat you up before she fucks you.
Really?
Yeah. And she can kick some ass. I've seen the results. It isn't pretty.
Chris turns around, looks at the woman, who is standing with her husband near the pool table. He turns back to us.
You got any beer? I think I need to have a beer and think about it.
Of course I got beer. I got whatever you want. Go tell the bartender and give me a minute with my son.
Cool. Chris walks to the bar. Leonard turns to me.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
This may be the last of these parties. I thought you'd want to see it, and I thought you'd enjoy it.
Why the last?
Making some changes.
Care to elaborate?
Not yet.
Okay. I look around. Who are all these people?
Gambling fools. A number of whom will lose enormous sums of money to me tonight.
All of them gamble with you?
All of the men. And a couple of the women. The other women are either with one of the men or were hired by me to keep the men happy.
Which ones are hired?
You like one of them?
Just curious.
See the one talking to your friend?
I look at Chris, who's standing by the bar. He is talking to a tall blonde woman, she's taller than him, who's wearing a short skirt and a tube top, neither of which covers much of her body. Yeah, I see her.
She's a pro. And at some point in the next couple of minutes, she's going to lean into his ear and offer to go upstairs with him.
He's going to shit.
If he's smart, he's going to go upstairs. It'll be the ride of his fucking life.
I laugh. You do this often?
As I said, this may be the last time. But I usually do it for the Super Bowl, the NCAA basketball championship, and the Kentucky Derby, which are the biggest betting days of the year.
Why here and not Vegas?
Same reason I never brought you to Vegas.
Which is?
I get followed around in Vegas. My every move is monitored by people whose sole aim in life is to figure out some way to lock me up. You're already a blip on the radar. But if you were to show up in Vegas, you would become a much larger blip, which doesn't need to happen. I have parties here because I can control what happens in this house and what people see and hear in this house. It's no coincidence that it's at the end of a one-way street and that it's built into the side of a cliff. Both things make surveillance of it much more difficult. I also found these former spies from England who opened a spy shop that sells high-tech spy shit. And they sweep it once a month for listening devices.
They ever find anything?
Yeah, but not in a while. Which means the government has either given up on this place or is using shit my guys can't find. Won't matter soon anyway, because as I said, these parties are ending.
And you're not going to tell me why?
Not yet.
He takes a drag of his cigar, speaks.
Everything good with you?
Yeah.
Keeping busy?
Yeah.
Doing what?
I wrote a movie script. Leonard smiles.
Ha! That's fucking great. Why didn't you tell me you were doing that?
I didn't want to be embarrassed if I couldn't finish it.
You want to be a writer?
I thought I'd try it.
Can I read the script?
No.
Why?
It's awful.
Come on.
No way.
It can't be that bad.
It's fucking awful. I showed it to a couple of people and everyone agrees, even though some of them won't say it directly.
Why'd you write a script? I thought you were going to write a book.
Scripts are easier and take less time, and I thought I might be able to make some money at it.
Most movies are awful, so it's probably perfect.
This is awful even on the movie scale of awful, and it wasn't supposed to be awful. While I was doing it, I thought it was brilliant. Nobody in their right mind would give me a penny for it.
There are plenty of people in Hollywood who aren't in their right minds. Some of them are here, right now, in this fucking house.
Trust me, even they would think it was awful.
You gonna write another one?
Yeah.
Good. You should write the dumbest, most commercial thing you can think of, and I bet you'll sell it.
Maybe.
How's your money holding up?
I still have too much of it.
Go spend it. Buy something beautiful.
I saw a Matisse drawing recently.
I'll expect to see it on your wall next time I'm in town.
You should come soon. My friends miss you and they're hungry. He laughs, motions toward the house.
Game's about to start. I gotta go in and take action.
And where's Snap?
Dallas is playing, and for some reason, Snap, despite the fact that he is from New York, has always been a Dallas fan. So I got a pair of tickets for him and his brother and sent them.
You're a good man, Leonard. He laughs.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
Let's go inside. I gotta get to work.
I follow him inside. Chris is still talking to the girl. Leonard walks toward the couches. A platinum-selling R&B star is singing the national anthem on television. Leonard starts mingling with his guests, telling them jokes, laughing with them, shaking hands with them. I go to the bar, get a cola, find a seat, wait for the game to start. Almost immediately, Chris sits next to me, speaks.
Dude, what's up?
That chick. I think she's into me.
I laugh.
What's so funny?
Are you into her?
Look at her. She's gorgeous. Of course I'm into her.
And why do you think she's into you?
She asked me if I wanted to go upstairs, have a private conversation.
What did you say?
I said, hell yes. She's grabbing her purse and we're going up.
I laugh again.
What's so funny?
I shake my head.
Come on, dude. What's so funny?
She's a hooker, Chris.
No way.
Yes way.
How do you know?
Leonard told me.
She's a fucking hooker?
Yeah.
I thought she was into me.
She probably was, though she gets paid to be into everyone here, literally and figuratively.
God damn it.
Get a drink. Let's watch the game. He goes to the bar, gets a drink, comes back. As the game starts, most of the people in the house gather in the area around the television. Leonard is sitting in the middle of the couch taking bets. From where we are sitting, we can hear the amounts. 50, 75, 100,000. We hear one man say 225. We hear another say 400. During the game, we hear more ridiculous bets. One man bets $100,000 that Dallas will get a first down. He loses the bet. Another bets 50 that the other team's kicker will miss a field goal. He wins the bet. Leonard takes every bet offered, though he often adjusts the odds. There are bets on first downs, fourth downs, on extra points, passing yards, rushing yards, points above and below. There are bets on fucking everything. At halftime, everyone goes upstairs, where a huge buffet has been laid out. There's prime rib, there are crab claws, there's Caesar salad, baked potatoes, creamed spinach. There's salmon steaks, there's pasta salad. There's a separate buffet with dessert cakes and tarts and pies and cookies and chocolates and eclairs. We get plates of food, go back downstairs, watch the halftime show. Chris meets two other women, one of them is a hooker, the other is married to a record producer. I meet the owner of a chain of car dealerships, an Israeli weapons dealer, a man who exports used American clothing to Japan, two professional gamblers, a man who says he is Iranian royalty and had to flee the Ayatollahs. Near the end of the show, Leonard sits down next to me. I speak.
How's it going?
Bad right now.
Why?
Down 1.2 million.
Fuck.
I'll get it back.
That's a lot of dough.
Just wait. People start getting stupid in the second half. You having fun?
Yeah, I am. This is ridiculous.
It is indeed.
You having fun?
It's work.
You should grab one of your girls. Relieve some stress before the game starts again.
They're not here for me. If you want one, though, you can have my room.
No thanks.
Across the room, a man starts calling for Leonard.
I gotta run.
Cool.
He gets up, walks to the man. The game starts again. Chris shoots pool with two of the hookers, tries to decide if he wants to sleep with one of them or both of them or both of them at the same time. I try to convince him that he should have both of them at the same time. He decides against it, says it doesn't feel right to him. I tell him it would probably feel awfully fucking right while he was doing it, and he laughs and says, yeah. As the game goes on, Leonard's guests get more and more drunk. Some of them start snorting coke off the coffee table, the bar, off compact disc covers. Some of them start smoking weed. There are more bets, and the bets, fueled by liquor and drugs, are riskier and more ridiculous. Leonard starts winning more of them, makes his money back, starts racking up huge gains. By the time the game ends, which Dallas wins, Leonard is obviously happy, though it doesn't show because he keeps a straight face. After the game, the women turn on music, start dancing. The liquor is still flowing. The drugs are still out. Some of the women start making out with the men. Some of them start making out with each other. Some of them stand on top of the bar, take off their shirts, and dance. I have a red eye and Chris has lawns to mow early in the morning, so we find Leonard. He's on the deck smoking a cigar. I speak. We're heading out.
You've had enough?
It was cool. I'm glad I came. Thank you for bringing me.
Of course. What are you going to do when you get home?
Write another dumb movie.
Make it really dumb.
I'll do my best.
And I'll come visit when I can, or when I'm finished with my new business.
The secret business. Leonard laughs.
You'll understand when I tell you.
Be careful.
I am being careful. That's why shit like this,
he motions toward the house,
is ending.
I'm glad I got to see it. He laughs.
If you stay a bit longer, you'll see a whole lot more.
I laugh. He puts his arm around me.
I'll walk you to the door.
Thanks. We walk to the door. Leonard opens it. We step outside. He speaks.
Safe travels.
You too. He looks at Chris.
Good to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
You change your mind about those girls, let me know. It'll be on me.
Chris laughs.
Thanks.
Leonard looks back at me.
See you soon, my son.
Later, Leonard. Chris and I walk to his truck, get inside, pull away. Leonard stands at the end of his drive, watches us go. Later, Leonard. Winter becomes spring. I write another movie script. I think it's great until I show it to my friends. They let me know that it is not great, not even close to great, that it should be thrown away. I meet a girl named Tanya at the local option. She's small, blonde, British. She has bright blue eyes and she likes to laugh. 15 minutes after we meet, she asks me if I want to take her home. I know I'll never love her, so I say, yeah. We have a lovely evening together. I buy the Matisse. It looks nice on my wall. I celebrate April Fool's Day, the one day a year when we are reminded what we are for the other 364. Happy Fool's Day, motherfucker. Happy April Fool's Day. I see Brooke on the street. She's shopping, I'm walking. We talk for 3 or 4 minutes, and it hurts me for 3 or 4 days. I go out every night with my friends. We go to bars, shoot pool. We go to clubs, listen to music. We go to parties, they drink. We go to dinner, eat. I still don't sleep well. After a year and a half, I still can't fucking sleep. I read every night until 4 or 5. I read until my eyes fall, until the rumbling and shaking lull me into black. I bring Tanya home again and again. I bring her home. She doesn't want anything from me or expect anything from me. She's easy to be with, and she likes to laugh, and she makes me laugh. I bring her home again and again. Spring becomes summer. The phone rings. I answer it. It's early in the morning. I just fell asleep. Hello?
My son. My son. It's a beautiful, beautiful day.
It's not day yet, Leonard. It's still fucking morning. Early fucking morning.
Early to bed, early to rise, that is the man who wins the prize.
I laugh. What the fuck happened to you?
Wonderful things.
Like what?
I'm coming to town. I'll tell you in person.
When are you coming?
Today. Meet me at the hotel for lunch.
Okay.
See you then. See you then.
I laugh. Yeah, see you then. I hang up the phone, go back to sleep. I wake up around noon, take a shower, walk down to the hotel. Leonard and Snap are sitting in the restaurant when I walk in. They stand. Leonard speaks.
My son.
Leonard. He hugs me, releases. I look at Snap. Long time. Been busy. Good to see you. You too, kid. We sit. I speak. What's the big news? Leonard smiles, reaches into his pocket, pulls out a plastic card, sets it in front of me.
Phone cards.
I laugh. Phone cards?
You got it. Phone cards.
So what?
So what? Think, my son. Think.
You want me to make a phone call?
No.
You want me to sell it?
No.
I have no idea. It's a phone card. I can buy one of those anywhere. Leonard shakes his head.
Not one of these.
It's somehow different? Leonard nods.
Where have I been traveling for the last several months?
All over the place.
All over the place where?
The Caribbean and Central America.
Why would I go there, and what does that have to do with me and my business and phone cards?
No idea.
Think, my son, think!
Just tell me. Leonard looks at Snapper.
He has no vision.
Snapper shrugs, speaks. Some people don't.
It's obvious to me.
He ain't you. Leonard looks back at me.
As you know, a large portion of my income is generated through the making and taking of bets. As you can imagine, the manner in which I take these bets, and the organization set up to handle and administrate them, is entirely illegal.
Right.
For a number of reasons, I don't want my business to be illegal anymore. The two primary reasons are that with the implementation of the RICO laws, which are designed to put people like me away, my life has become increasingly more difficult. I'm tired of being followed, surveyed. I'm tired of fucking FBI agents harassing people who do business with me. I'm tired of having to monitor everyone I fucking know to make sure they're not ratting me out. I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to die in jail. I have some things I want to do before I'm gone, and I will not be able to do them if I'm in jail. If I legalize my businesses, I can't be sent to jail.
Perfectly understandable.
The other reason is the pledge I made to my dying father, which was to play the golf course where he labored as a lawnmower and play it just like one of the fucking members. As you know, I have had a very difficult time doing this. One of the reasons it has been so difficult is because I am a known criminal. If I stop being a criminal, and I can prove that I have stopped being a criminal, it may open certain doors for me.
Also perfectly understandable.
In 1982, the federal government ordered the breakup of AT&T, which held a monopoly on local and long-distance telephone service. The breakup was ordered so that competition would be spurred and consumers would no longer be forced to pay rates that were much higher than they should have been. More recently, the Telecommunications Act was passed because the net result of the 82 breakup wasn't as positive as was hoped. The new act opens long-distance lines to dozens of new phone companies, most of which will go out of business. A few won't, and a few will carve out specific little niches. And one of those niches is the phone card business.
Leonard picks up the card.
You buy a card. You have a specific amount of money on the card. $10, $20, $50, whatever. You make long-distance calls through the card company's operators. You talk until the card runs out, and then you buy another one. You with me?
I nod. Yeah, I'm with you.
You understand where I'm going with this?
No, I don't. Leonard looks at Snapper, speaks.
He has no vision.
It ain't that. It's that you got a lot. That's why you're in charge.
He's my son. He should have it too.
Well, he don't. And that's that. Leonard looks back at me.
Do you happen to know what's legal in the Caribbean and certain parts of Central and South America that is illegal here?
I would imagine there are a few things.
You're right about that. But what that might be directly related to me?
Again, probably a few things, but I'm guessing from this conversation that you're referring to gambling.
Bingo! It's a fucking gambler's paradise down there. And what isn't legal becomes legal with a wad of hundreds slipped into the hands of the correct local official. I love it. I fucking love it.
I laugh. So what does this have to do with phone cards?
Phone cards make it all legal, and let me make money off it regardless of the outcome of the bets.
How is that?
I recently relocated the bulk of the people who work for me in my gambling business to the Caribbean and certain parts of Central and South America, where what they do is entirely legal. I'm having everyone who places bets through my people buy phone cards from the phone card company that I now own, and I am charging very high rates for those calls. All of the money involved is moved through offshore banks, which are not beholden to the laws of this country. And the only person breaking the law in this equation is the individual placing the bet on American soil.
Really?
Let's say you're one of my clients. You go to a retail location that sells my phone cards. You buy a few of them. You call a number you've been given that's been mailed to you from an offshore location. That number only receives calls through the operator who works for my phone company and who takes calls using my phone cards. They put you through to someone sitting at a desk in a location where gambling is legal. That person takes your bet, and either takes a credit card number or provides you with wiring instructions for payment. You place your bet, you are given a confirmation number. The call costs you $10 per minute. You have broken the law by placing the bet, but no one on my end has broken the law because they are all working in places where their activities are legal.
Are you sure about all this?
There are a few gray areas, but they're gray enough so that if someone wants to arrest me or tries to prosecute me, I'll tie them up in court for fucking decades.
Very impressive, Leonard.
I'm going to send the federal prosecutor in Las Vegas a note inviting him to come over to my house and kindly kiss my ass.
I laugh. Snapper laughs. Leonard looks around.
I hope those fuckers have someone watching or listening to us right now.
He lifts his middle finger, waves it around.
If so, this is for you, because you're not gonna get me, you fuckers.
I laugh again. When I stop, I speak. Congratulations, Leonard.
Thank you.
I'm incredibly impressed.
Thank you.
We should celebrate.
Why do you think we're here?
Good. This time, though, I'm taking care of the check.
No, that's not how it works.
It is tonight.
No.
Leonard.
What?
I hold up a wad of cash. This is the last of the money I made working for you. I've been keeping it so I could spend it on one of our dinners. You're going to shut the fuck up and let me take care of the check tonight. He laughs.
Thank you, my son. Thank you.
I cut up the fake driver's license, throw it away. Jimmy Testardo no longer exists. I close the safe deposit box. I get a job at a clothing store on Michigan Avenue. I work in the stockroom with a Filipino and two Mexicans. Most of my work is at night, after the store is closed. My coworkers and I are given a list by the manager with such tasks as replace flat front khakis, replenish and fold all fashioned t-shirts, replace ribbon dispensers behind counter, sweep and mop entrance floor. It's a dumb job and I don't get paid shit, but it feels good to work. I write another script. I send it to my friends. I know they're tired of reading my awful scripts. I tell them this will be the last one. I start sleeping. Every second or third night I sleep easily. Well. The shaking and rumbling of the train is a song that lulls me into 6, 8, 10 glorious hours of peace, silence, and blackness. I walk in the heat, in the rain, in the day, night, morning, afternoon, sunrise, sunset. I walk for hours. I walk along the lake and I jump into the water. I see a bench and I sit and have a smoke. I see an ice cream truck and I order the largest cone they sell. I take naps on the lawns of public parks. I listen to music played in bandstands. I read in the shade of trees, in the shade of towering trees. I go to the zoo, look at the animals. Yo, gorilla, what the fuck's up? My friends tell me the script isn't bad, might actually be good. It's a romantic comedy, a love triangle between friends with a happy ending. I decide to try to sell it to Hollywood. I don't know anyone in Hollywood. But so what, I'll try anyway. I wander the halls of the art museum. The pictures are still beautiful and the galleries are air-conditioned. I wander the halls. I visit Lily. Her flowers wilt in the heat, so I bring more of them. I don't talk much. Don't feel the need to talk anymore. Just sit with her. It's good to know she's there. Just sit. I get fired from the job at the clothing store. The manager decided she wanted every article of clothing in the store, and there are thousands of them, taken off the shelves and refolded. I ask her why. She says because I said so. I try to organize a strike with the other stockroom guys, and I succeed, and we buy a box of donuts and sit on the floor in the middle of the store and refuse to work. She tells the other stockroom guys they can keep their jobs if they end the strike, and she fires me and tells me if I don't leave the store immediately, she's calling the police. I take the donuts with me. My friend has a cousin that works for a famous director in Hollywood. I call her and ask her to read my script. She says send it and I'll read it when I have some time. I call her once a week to remind her. She doesn't read it, so I keep calling her. Leonard calls me, tells me he's coming to town. He says he's touring with a rock band. They have a show in Chicago. I ask him what band. He tells me. I laugh. Ask him what the fuck is he doing touring with a rock band. He tells me the singer is a friend and he felt like having a strange summer. I ask him if he wants me to meet him at his hotel. He says no, he's staying somewhere else. He tells me where. I start walking downtown. The hotel is on Michigan Avenue, across the street from his regular hotel. Its lobby is also several stories up, above a high-end shopping center. I take an elevator to the lobby. The doors open to a vast room that takes up the entire floor of the building. Along one wall are the reception and concierge desks. Along the other three are floor-to-ceiling windows. In the middle of the room, there are tables and chairs, long, luxurious sofas, waiters and waitresses carrying trays of appetizers and drinks. I look for Leonard. See him sitting on a sofa with several women and one man. I recognize the man as the singer of the band. I walk toward them. Leonard sees me coming, stands, yells, "My son! My son!" I wave, laugh. Everyone on the couch turns and looks at me. "My son has arrived!" "What's up, Leonard?"
"Living the rock and roll lifestyle. Loving the rock and roll lifestyle."
I laugh again. Sit down in a chair across from Leonard. He introduces me to the singer and the women. The singer, who also plays the drums, is in his early 40s, has short graying hair, the slight accent of a Texas childhood. He wears jeans and a t-shirt. None of the women are older than 20, and on a scale of 1 to 10, they all rank somewhere around 50. They each wear different versions of almost nothing, which is fine with me. Although Leonard seems perfectly comfortable with them, he doesn't really fit in. He is significantly older than all of them, and his clothes are more like those of an accountant. The singer and the girls are all drinking. Leonard has a pitcher of water. I order a cola and sit and listen to the singer tell stories about his life on the road as a rock star. He talks about trashing hotel rooms, orgies in the backs of buses, sets of twins, a set of triplets, about things in his contract that venues are required to provide, such as peanut butter cups stacked in perfect pyramids and cans of cola cooled to exactly 36 degrees. The girls hang on every word. Leonard seems to know the stories, adds certain details to them, and says, "That's rock and roll, man, that's rock and roll," at the end of each of them. I just sit and laugh, though I'm not sure if I'm laughing with the singer or at the singer. At the end of the story about a particularly randy mother and daughter team, which draws big laughs and several oohs and ahs, the singer says he needs to go upstairs and meditate before he leaves for the show. One of the girls asks him what kind of meditation he practices, and he invites her to come upstairs with him so that he can show her. She obliges, and they leave together. The rest of the girls, now sitting with Leonard and me, leave fairly quickly, each inventing a different excuse. When the last of them is gone, Leonard looks at me and he speaks.
What do you think?
About him or them?
Them.
I love them all. He laughs.
And him?
He was fine. Leonard laughs again.
He's a dick.
I laugh.
He is. He's a dick.
Why do you hang out with him?
Because this is fun. I rock, I roll, I live it, I love it. And even though he's a dick, he's a fun dick.
I laugh.
You're doing good?
Yeah.
Anything new?
I got that girl in Hollywood to read my script. Leonard smiles.
You just kept bugging her, and finally she caved in?
I nod, smile. Yeah.
What'd she say?
She said it's really good, that I could probably sell it, that I should move out there and try to keep doing it. Leonard smiles, claps his hands.
That's fucking great.
There's more.
More? What kind of more?
After we finished talking about the script, we just kept talking. First night, we talked for 5 hours. Next night, 5 more. For the last 3 nights, we've been up until dawn, just talking.
What do you talk about?
I don't know. Everything and nothing. We just talk.
Talk for hours and hours and hours?
Yeah.
What's her name?
Liza.
That's a good name. A strong name. Are you in love?
I've never met her.
Are you in love?
I don't know.
My, oh my, this is fucking wonderful. You're in love and you're moving to L.A.
I'm not moving.
Why?
I'm just not.
Are you fucking crazy?
No.
You just got a new job, right?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I work at a frame store. I'm the cashier.
That's a bullshit job.
Yeah, it is.
You'd rather do that than be a writer?
No.
Then move to L.A. where you can make silly movie money doing what you want and spend time with the girl you stay up all night talking to.
I don't want to leave here.
Why?
I just don't.
You gotta let her go.
What?
You heard me. You gotta let her go.
This